When you picked out your clothes that you're wearing today, what went into your decision? Were you coordinating colors? Taking care not to pair plaid with polka dots? Were you thinking about the fabric and where it came from, how it was made, and whether it was eco-friendly? For our guest this hour, fashion is also a matter of conscience, and she shares with us her tips for shopping responsibly. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're wondering, do you hope to change the world with your wardrobe? How do you incorporate conscience into your clothing and lifestyle? You can let us know at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. You can also comment on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. My guest is Greta Egan. She's an expert, stylist, and writer specializing in conscious living. She's the founder of FashionMeGreen.com, a sustainable fashion awareness project, and author of Wear No Evil, How to Change the World with Your Wardrobe. Greta, thanks for being with us today.
Good morning.
What's the evil that we're trying to avoid here in your book?
Well, a lot of people don't know, but the fashion industry is actually the second most polluting industry behind the petroleum industry. And so there are a lot of ways that it gets that ranking and that status. It can come down to the CO2 emissions of having things made in different parts of the world and shipped all over and kind of piecemeal put together. It also has to do with the dyeing process, which can be quite toxic, and even the materials that we use. You know, there are a lot of synthetic materials that are made that don't biodegrade, but they wind up in our landfills, and they're off-gassing as they're trying to biodegrade. So there's a lot of areas that we do have this sort of toxic accumulation of what makes the fashion industry a little less glamorous than we thought it would.
Well, you actually compare shopping for clothes to shopping for groceries. Can you draw the similarity there? How is it similar?
Absolutely. I think that there's a really good parallel that runs between food and fashion in this regard, which is, you know, I think a while back we started to look more closely at how our food is made, where it comes from, you know, the ethics behind it. How are the animals or the farmers being treated? Our land, our waterways, what sort of pesticides, fertilizers, or even GMOs are being used. And the same really does translate over to the fashion industry in the sense that the production of our clothing does go through, you know, we're growing fibers, we're growing cotton, or maybe there are animals that are being used, and how are they being treated, and how are the people being treated who are helping to make the fashion pieces that we use. Not to mention, you know, the waterways and how we're using our soil and how we're using our water. So it's that sort of conscious level of participation, which is to say that you're not blindly buying food or blindly buying fashion, but that you care about where it came from and who and what it supports.
Well, before we dig too deeply into the matter and learn more about what exactly is going into the creation of our clothing, talk a little bit about where we can shop more responsibly. It seems as though this requires some sort of specialty boutique. Is it easy enough to find so-called green clothing in a department store, for example?
Yeah, actually it is. So I wrote Wear No Evil, How to Change the World with Your Wardrobe, to act as this sort of guide for people who are maybe already green in other areas of their life. You know, maybe you're already shopping at a Whole Foods or you're already concerned about the emissions of your car. And when it comes to our wardrobes, there's a huge disconnect between what we're actually supporting and what we think we're supporting. But it doesn't mean that we have to jump off, you know, the diving board into the deep green end. You know, there are many shades, 50 shades of green, that we can participate in being more ethical and environmentally friendly in our clothing and fashion choices. So what I do with Wear No Evil is I actually outline a method, a way of looking at and looking for these different ways that you can participate. And it doesn't mean that you can only shop at a eco-green specific boutique, although those are very helpful because they do all the vetting for you. But it is, you know, it is a bigger conversation, and it is something that you can participate in all over the world when you're traveling, if you look for something, you know, that's made locally, then you're participating in that sort of local sustainable economy by purchasing and supporting something that's made locally. Or you can check the tag and you can see that it's made from a natural fiber versus one of those synthetic fibers I was talking about that doesn't biodegrade. Or you can even, you know, do some research if you find a brand that you really like, you know, style-wise that you're responding to, then go online and you can usually today find more information about either their corporate social responsibility, or they'll maybe have a tag, you know, on their website that says sustainability, and it'll talk about their practices and where they're committed. And it's not to say that any brand is 100% hitting all the marks all the time, because at this point in time, that doesn't really exist. But there are brands doing little bits and pieces of what they can, and the motto really is some is better than none. So you can look for those things, and actually that's what I try to point out, is that it's not just one answer, one right way, but there are many ways that we can look for these kind of green initiatives.
Let's start talking about that. You've got something that you call the Integrity Index, 16 factors we should consider when we're purchasing our clothing. So let's take a look at, well, I guess we'll spread this list across the course of an hour. 16 elements is quite a bit to think about. Let's start off with the dyes, though. What should we be thinking about when it comes to the color of our clothing?
Right. So the dyes is a really good one to start with, especially for people who maybe have found that they do have a sensitivity to the clothing they're wearing. So, you know, you had mentioned food as a parallel to this conversation of fashion. You know, there are people who are having health effects, you know, health side effects to the clothing that they're wearing. And it makes sense when you start to look at that dye that they're putting next to their body and wearing close to their skin, you know, it might be creating a rash, or it might be something that is really toxic. And the hard part for us is that we here in the U.S., we do have, you know, the EPA has put into effect, you know, these different standards of what we allow or don't allow and how those kinds of dyes need to be treated. But the majority of the clothing that we have in the U.S. is actually imported. And in those other countries around the world, they don't have the same standard of regulation. So we find ourselves being exposed to these more toxic dyes that might have that kind of adverse effect on our health. And actually, I did some interviews for the book, and Christoph Frizzi, who is the co-founder of an eco brand in San Francisco called Amor Vert, you know, he was doing his research and attending conferences and heard a story about a manufacturer over in Asia that had all of their production, you know, in the production line, they do a cut and sew production, and they were cutting out the fabric patterns for the clothing. And they, when you cut out a pattern, a traditional pattern, you do have these pieces of the pattern that you don't use. They're called the offcuts, and they fall to the floor and they're discarded, but you know, you sew the pattern together and you have a shirt. So they package up the shirts and they ship them out, and we wear them. We're putting them next to our skin, and we may or may not wash them first. But the rub is that those offcuts from the same spool of cloth that was used have to be treated as toxic waste because of the chemicals that were used in the dyes. Yet we're wearing the same fabric next to our skin. When I heard that story, my mind was blown.
Wow. And there's no way to, I mean, you can't just wash it away with a single wash. You buy a T-shirt at the store, you bring it home, you toss it in the wash machine, and then it's clean?
Well, of course, when you're washing, it is like anything, you know, that it will help to lessen the potency. But the problem with that is that then we now have washed, we've taken those chemicals, and they're now in our waterways, right? So they're in your washing machine, they're in your waterways, they're now being circulated throughout our system here in the U.S., and that's the scary part about kind of, you know, not having these global standards in place where we recognize that the standards need to be high across the board to protect us from these chemicals. So one of the things that we can look for is there's a certification called the Blue Sign Certification. And Eileen Fisher, who is really leading the charge in a lot of areas, but specifically in working with these sort of low-impact dyes, uses the Blue Sign certification. It's something you can look for that brands use, and that actually is a low-impact dye that has a lot less of the chemical impact of a standard dye. So that's one thing you can look for. The other thing is that, you know, brands are now using and boasting about using vegetable dyes or non-toxic dyes. So it's really just about being aware and kind of keeping your eye out for those kinds of listings. And it's one of those things where it's like if you took a test and you did really well, you'd probably want to share it. But if you didn't do really well, you wouldn't. So these brands take that on, and if they're doing something really well, they'll want to share it, and you'll likely find that they're sharing their practices of being more eco-friendly on their tags.
Now, you mentioned fibers earlier and wanting to gravitate toward natural fibers. We can dig into that a little bit. I'm thinking about another interview we did on the show, though, once with Sarah Gilbert, who's host of a TV talk show and had been a star of the sitcom Roseanne. She was doing a book about similar to this, in choosing green products and cleaning up our lifestyle in this regard. And she warned about wearing cotton because of the pesticides used in the cotton fields. So how do you reconcile these two things?
Right. And that's true. I mean, about 12% of the world's, you know, total pesticides are used in growing cotton. And there are a lot of cases, actually, that are starting to come out to show the adverse effects on the farmers. And then, like I said, you know, people who are sensitive enough to feel that when they're wearing it next to their bodies. My advice is always to use and stick with choosing a natural fiber. So that could be a cotton, a hemp. We even have clothing made out of nettles or beechwood pulp. And my recommendation is to start with natural fibers and then to go to the next level and choose organic natural fibers. So that way you ensure that you're not being exposed to those pesticides and fertilizers. And it's actually much better for the planet as a whole, because if we keep using those chemicals in our soil and that leaks into our waterways, you know, that's contributing to the problem for our entire ecosystem, not alone, you know, let alone what we're wearing next to our bodies.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Greta Egan. She's author of Wear No Evil, How to Change the World with Your Wardrobe. And we're taking your questions as well at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. What do you think? Do you try to wear no evil? How do you incorporate your conscience into your clothing decisions, whether it's seeking out fair labor practices or using organic fibers? We want to hear from you. 800-642-1234. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with Greta Egan, author of Wear No Evil, How to Change the World with Your Wardrobe, and taking your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Wondering how you make conscious decisions about the clothing that you wear, where you buy it from, how it's made, and whether it's eco-friendly. Let's take a call first from Laura in Menominee. Hi, Laura.
Hi, thank you. I have a couple points, and I'll make them very quickly. First of all, I'd just like to comment on how much I agree with your guest about the parallels between the food and the fashion industry. I'm a designer, and I have a sustainable bridal wear line, and I've also been a produce manager in an organic food co-op for 3.5 years. So I got to see firsthand how slow food movement fashion could really learn from that movement. Another comment is just that I think it's important for people to remember that, or to realize that the textile and apparel industry is the third largest industry worldwide after energy production and food production. And as much as I hate to say this, as there are just too many clothes in the world. So as important as it is for companies like Patagonia to recycle polyester and have all these great green initiatives. The greenest thing that we as consumers can do is buy secondhand. That's just what I wanted to say, and thank you so much for the topic.
Thanks, Laura. And in fact, that's one of your criteria on the Integrity Index, Greta.
Yeah, that's true, and she's absolutely right. The greenest thing we can do, and actually one of the easiest ways that we can participate in more sustainable fashion practices, is to buy what already exists. So that is shopping secondhand, doing clothing swaps, you know, with your friends and your family. And there's so many resources now. I mean, especially in the online space, it's not even about a physical location. We have lots of consignment stores and thrift shops that you can find, you know, locally in your neighborhood. But you can also go online to sites like threadflip.com or to materialworld.com. And they will take your clothing that you're no longer excited about wearing, and either help you sell it or trade it in for, in the case of Material World, they trade it in for gift cards so that you can get new clothing when you're ready. And the good news about cycling that clothing through is that it gives it a second life cycle. So that's one of the best ways, and she's absolutely right. Although I do have to say that textile recycling is something I'm really excited about, and brands like she mentioned, you know, Patagonia, even Nike, and H&M now getting in on the act is a really great development, in the sense that we're taking those raw materials, the fabric that's already been produced, and the energy and the water and the labor and everything that's already gone into making those fabrics gets reused again when they're able to recycle it, rather than starting from fresh. And I have a couple of statistics that I share in my book that EcoGear did. They compared conventional cotton to recycled cotton yarn, and they found that that if you have a savings of water consumption, savings in the amount of land use, and the cultivation of those crops that could be used, you know, for another agricultural use, in addition to energy savings, is over 17%. So you do find that there are these kind of technological advances in doing this sort of textile recycling that is a savvy way of addressing, well, what do? We've got so much out there. How do we make it useful again?
And what's the difference between that and upcycling?
So the difference between recycling and upcycling is that when you recycle, let's say you recycle a glass bottle, you get another glass bottle. When you upcycle something, say you have a plastic bottle and you upcycle it into a yarn that is then used to make a T-shirt. So you're making something different than the original intended use of that material.
It's so strange to think that something like plastic can be turned into clothing, and I know that it's done all the time. But how exactly is it done, and is that in itself a process that is a detriment to the environment?
Well, it comes back to that statement of some is better than none, and there really is no 100% clear way of doing this. But there is, you know, with the textile recycling, as I've already talked about, there are two ways of participating in it, and one is using natural fibers, which, so for example, if we had a 100% cotton T-shirt that was not in a state to be passed down and worn again, then it could be textile recycled, which means that they actually take the fabric and they shred it down to the fiber state, and then they reweave it into, they spin it into a yarn, and they will often use a virgin fiber to weave into it as well, so that it has a better strength quality to it. And then they'll make a new fabric from that recycled T-shirt, which is amazing, and I'm in full support of that. I think it's great. The other way of doing it is to use 100%, like you had said, like a plastic, a PET, polyester fiber. So that could be something like a polyester dress that then is, you know, again, it's now in this case, because it's polyester or plastic, they would melt it down, and then they actually pour it through what would look like a shower head to get these, you know, these long threads, and they spin it and then weave a new fabric from that. And, you know, at this point in time, using the polyesters or the plastic recycling method is something that we're more comfortable with and more technologically capable of doing. But it's great to see that we can do it with both natural and synthetic fibers.
Let's take another call from Barb in Burnett. Hi, Barb.
Good morning. I'm sorry, but I have forgotten your guest's name. I am a small sheep producer from central Wisconsin, and am confused as to why wool has not been mentioned as one of the ultimate eco-friendly fabrics. You have sheep, a good share of the wool we use in this country comes from New Zealand and Australia, and there as well as many places in this country, sheep are grazed for maintenance. They maintain the integrity of the land, prevent tillage of land that should not be tilled, produce both meat and fiber, essentially from the photosynthetic process of sunlight.
Thanks,
just
Barb.
I wonder why your guest didn't bring that up.
Yeah, that's interesting. Greta, what do you say to that?
Yes, I agree. Wool is a natural fiber that I do list and that I do support as a good natural fiber for us to use. You know, it comes, like she had mentioned, it comes from a natural source, and if you can be sure about, you know, where that source is coming from and the treatment of those animals, that also gets into, are you buying fabric that, you know, there are people who are vegan and want only to support vegan textiles, which is another avenue we can go down. But they're absolutely, it's a great fiber. It's one of the warmest fibers. It's biodegradable, and it is it's a fiber that I would absolutely put on the list of natural fibers to look for and to support.
Now is a good time to remind our listeners that we're talking with Greta Egan. She's an expert stylist and writer specializing in conscious living. She's the founder of FashionMeGreen.com, a sustainable fashion awareness project, and author of the new book, Wear No Evil, How to Change the World with Your Wardrobe. And we're taking your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. How do you incorporate your conscience into your clothing decisions, whether it's seeking out fair labor practices or using organic fibers, something along those lines? What's most important to you in considering which clothes to buy? You can let us know by emailing us as well at talk@wpr.org. Let's talk to Frank. He is in Liberty now. Hi, Frank.
Hi there. It's great. The previous callers kind of hammered on some of the points I'd like to make, and that's that especially in regards to sheep and wool as a natural fiber. Tillage of land, be it organic or not, is a huge detriment and a net contributor to, carbon emissions, be it whether it's organic or not. There's no getting around that. And cotton, unfortunately, is, as you probably mentioned, huge sucker of pesticides, et cetera, resources. I'm wondering, there's alternative fibers out there in the world. Western civilization got along just fine without cotton for quite many, many thousands of years. And, there's linen, nettle, there's other fibers out there, and some of them are less demanding, per se, than cotton. How about that?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And there's a chart that I have in my book where we talk about natural fibers, what it's made of. And I list, cotton, organic cotton, flax, bamboo, hemp, nettle, rami, jute, modal, silk. We even have fabrics being made of corn and milk protein. So you're absolutely right. There are different ways that we can produce fibers. And cotton is a thirsty plant. Even though it is a natural fiber and it's a fiber that biodegrades, we've already discussed the importance of making sure that cotton is organic, if at all possible, and supporting organic production of cotton. I think what it comes down to at this point in time, and we're starting to see a shift, in from generic cotton and traditional cotton growing methods to organic cotton, is that it's just really about supply and demand. So, that's where it comes back to the consumer, and this is why I really try to educate the consumer even a little bit, because the purchases that you make every time you buy something, you vote with your dollars for what you want that brand to put out there. And you're saying, yes, I support that you're using linen. I support that you're using an organic cotton. I support that you're using hemp, which is, you know, by the way, a great fabric, but something that we haven't been able to produce the way that other countries have because of what's tied up, you know, legally around the production and growing of the hemp plant in this country. But I think that that's actually already getting better. So it does come down to, you know, the farmers that are committed to what they're producing, the supply and demand, and the incentive for them to produce that kind of fiber for us.
And Frank was also concerned about, you know, the sheer amount of fossil fuels it would take along the way of manufacturing and commerce. And one of the elements in your integrity index is to buy local. You know, I'm just thinking anecdotally, the last time I saw, I can't even think of the last time I saw a tag inside of a shirt that didn't say made in China or someplace very far from where I live. What are some resources for finding local manufacturers, if there are any?
Well, I always say that you can, if you have a local market, you know, where people are making and selling things and you know about that, that's a great place to start. Or even boutiques that maybe are stocking local designers. And there is this sort of return to the makers movement, which is happening in the U.S. right now. So there are a lot more options than there used to be. And I would actually say that if you do start looking at the tags again, you might be surprised that more and more of these brands are making in the U.S. That's kind of been a trend that we're returning to, bringing those jobs back to the U.S., especially in the Los Angeles garment district area. And so you can look for brands that way. Also, there are a number of online sites that we already sort of touched on with the rise of the eco boutique for 2014. I kind of predicted that we would have this great rise of all these resources, and it's been true. So you can go to sites like Modavanti.com, and you can actually, you know, specifically look for the tag of the sustainability tag that says this was made, you know, local, made in the USA. You can shop Zadie.com or shop Ethica.com, and these kinds of sites are already very committed to finding those brands for you. And then, you know, you can even look. I look all the time just when I'm out shopping because, like I said, you might be surprised at what you find where more of these brands, especially smaller brands, designer brands, are trying to keep it local and retain the control of their production and also support the local economy.
The fourth item on your list is fair trade. Tell us a little bit about how fair trade works.
So fair trade guarantees that the artisans and producers around the world that are working in the fashion industry and across different industries. I mean, you've probably seen your fair trade coffee or your fair trade chocolate, that they are paid a standard and fair wage for what they're producing and the sourcing of their products. And you can look for that fair trade symbol. I mean, just as I said that there's the blue sign symbol that you can look for low-impact dyes, you can look for the fair trade symbol that is a third-party certification that guarantees that, yes, you know, this company, this designer, this brand is working with artisans in a fair way.
And along those lines, too, there are some textiles that might be attached to a social cause.
Right. So that's another easy and great way. You know, I always try to say for people who feel like being, you know, conscious about their wardrobes might feel a little daunting, just the way, you know, when you started eating more consciously and being more aware of what's in your food and what to look for and where it came from. So I always try and say, you know, some of the easiest ways that you can start to participate in this is what we already talked about, which is buying secondhand, buying what already exists. And the other way is to start purchasing products that are linked to a cause. And this comes up a lot, you know, especially when there is, you know, an unfortunate incident that's happened in the world, you know, like an earthquake or a tsunami or something like that, then then, you know, the fashion community has done a good job of rallying behind something like that, and partnering with different organizations that are on the ground to help. And one of the ways that they fund that is by producing a T-shirt or, you know, a certain line of clothing, or for a certain limited of time, you know, period of time, you know, a percentage of those, the proceeds of the sales of that line goes towards helping that effort. And, you know, and we also have very clear examples of this with Tom's Shoes or the Warby Parker, which is the sunglasses, where they have a one-for-one model, which is that every time you buy a pair of glasses from Warby Parker, they make sure, and they work with an organization that makes sure that someone in need in a different part of the country or the world receives a pair of eyeglasses or and even eye exams that they might be needing.
And you also highlight the fact that some manufacturers are able to make clothing without any waste. How do we know if that's been done?
Absolutely. This is so exciting, too. So I kind of geek out and get excited about the textile recycling. I also get excited about the zero-waste patterns. There's a designer who's doing a really wonderful job with this. His name is Daniel Silverstein. And he was actually on that show Fashion Star, which I think was a year or so ago. But he's a designer based in New York, and he like myself, was just a little overwhelmed and kind of, you know, had a moral dilemma about participating and being in the fashion industry because it was so wasteful. You know, as he got deeper into understanding production and going through fashion school, design school, and learning about production, you know, he was really disturbed by the fact that, you know, 10 to 15% of the fabric that you use, you know, to make a piece of clothing actually is discarded in offcuts. And why can't we use the full piece of fabric? Why can't we be a bit smarter about how we arrange those patterns? And that's essentially what he did. You know, he manipulated the way that he cut these patterns in a really smart way so that virtually every piece of the fabric is used, if not every piece of the fabric is used when he makes a garment, so that it's a zero-waste pattern. It's a zero-waste garment that he produces. It's really fascinating.
Hmm. We're talking with Greta Egan. She's a stylist and writer specializing in conscious living, and she's the author of the new book, Wear No Evil, How to Change the World with Your Wardrobe. We're taking your questions and comments as well at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And our email address is talk@wpr.org. We've been going through her list of, it's called the Integrity Index, elements we should think about as we consider how to make our wardrobe just a bit more green. And after the break, I want to talk a little bit about how we can prioritize these decisions. It's a lot to think about as you're going to the grocery store, or rather the department store, and you've got 16 different areas to think about. Greta's got some advice for us as we try to make these decisions on our own. I'm Cynthia Schuster, filling in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with Greta Egan. She's author of Wear No Evil, How to Change the World with Your Wardrobe. You can join us in the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. You can also leave us a comment on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, talking about how to make more eco-friendly decisions when it comes to fashion. And Greta, we're only about halfway through your list of the Integrity Index, but before we continue to dig in, I wanted to take a moment here and just talk about how we can get over maybe the intimidation factor here. We've only gone through, I think, 9 out of the 16 elements. So how do we decide, how do we decide to make these conscientious decisions without, striking a home run here?
Right. So the book really came, and the Integrity Index really came out of my personal experience. I dedicated my dissertation in graduate school to sustainability and fashion, and that's when I discovered all of these factors, which now make up the Integrity Index. And when I came out of of school and out of finishing that 80-page body of research, I was, you know, once you know more than you did before, you really can't go back. You know, your conscience won't let you. And that's where I was operating from. And I really tried to satisfy all 16 of these integrity index factors all at the same time. And I just found that, you know, it's virtually impossible because we really aren't set up. You know, the industry as a whole hasn't evolved to that place. And while it's, you know, it's a good effort and there's good intention behind it, I really had to come to terms with the fact that it just really wasn't something that I could do, and my style suffered. I tried to do it for a while. My style suffered, my sense of self and you know, how I felt and what I was wearing and how I would put together an outfit really suffered, and that was not a sustainable way of actually, you know, building a wardrobe and participating in fashion. So that's when I came up with what I call the diamond diagram, which limits, you know, you're exposed in the book, you're exposed to all the ways that a piece of fashion can be considered eco or sustainable or ethical. And then what I really do in the book is I open it up to the reader because this is a personal journey. And I'm not the holier-than-now expert trying to say, you know, there's only this one way, and if you don't go this way, you're doing it wrong. That's not the case at all. It's that, you know, as a consumer and as an individual, you really get to decide what's important to you. So, you know, as we've gone over some of these integrity index factors and people are listening, you know, there might be some that really resonate with you. You know, organic cotton might sound like something that you really want to support, or maybe you're vegan and you want to make sure that you're choosing products that don't harm animals and that are cruelty-free. Or that you really are excited about, you know, these recycled textiles, or supporting local people. So what it is it's all about actually narrowing it down to just a few of those integrity index factors that really resonate with you, and that they're yours alone, and you can share them with people, and you can tell them about, or you can keep them to yourself and look for them. But that's the whole point, is that, you know, this is meeting people where they're at, and you can decide how deep you want to go into it. If you want to try and satisfy, you know, four different integrity index factors every time you shop, which, by the way, is possible when you do shop eco-fashion brands that are dedicated to that, or if you're, you know, you just want to make sure that you're doing some part, you know, you're doing one thing, you're satisfying, you're either shopping natural fibers or you're shopping something that's linked to a cause, then you know that you're not just buying blindly, but that you're actually supporting something, you know, that you value in style, but you also value the backstory of how it was produced.
Well, of the factors that are in your integrity index, which might you say is the most difficult to get information about? What's the hardest to know about a brand?
Well, I think the one that we did touch on, which was the zero waste, it's becoming more visible, which is great. There's also some really fascinating developments about that are coming about in the area with 3D printing clothing, which is also a zero waste method. And that's very exciting, and I think we're going to see more coming in that area where it will be easier for people to participate and to blatantly see what these brands are doing. One of the other things that we don't much talk about, and it's a different integrity factor that we haven't yet touched on, is convertible fashion. You know, pieces of fashion that can be worn multiple ways. I have a dress from Thieves, which is a Canadian brand, that can be worn, 20 different ways. And I pack it in my suitcase. I travel a lot. And in one piece of clothing, you know, I have various outfits. And that's a very sustainable way of dressing and having a wardrobe with, you know, fewer pieces that do more. And that's also kind of a nod to slow fashion, which is, you know, being a bit more choosy with what you bring into your wardrobe and being more thoughtful about how, you know, if it really works for you and maybe doing that test of, can I wear this five different ways before you buy it? And if you can come up with those five different ways, then it's a good purchase. And if not, then you might want to sleep on it.
Mm-hmm. You brought up slow fashion. Could you just define that for us a bit?
Right. So slow fashion is the opposite of fast fashion. And there are a number of brands out there, and I think we're starting to see more of them, and they're being very open with their story about how, you know, fast fashion has just been a runaway train where we used to produce fashion in four seasons, and actually it used to be like, you know, summer, spring, and fall, winter. Now we have fashion coming out every month. I think Zara makes a million pieces of clothing a day, which is insane to think about, and that's part of, you know, this dilemma of are we being responsible in this production of fashion. And there are these brands that are kind of going the opposite way and saying, okay, we're not making clothing that is collection or season specific. We're making styles that are classic with good quality materials and a good quality production that will last and that are timeless and that you'll be able to use and wear over and over again. And so you can look for those kinds of brands too.
Let's take a call from Jocelyn in Sheboygan. Hi, Jocelyn.
Hi, good morning. I don't know how this is a horrifying subject as far as what I've just learned lately. I've never bought fur, and I've always shopped in thrift stores. I'm a vegetarian, you know. I love animals, and the world itself, and we've created this colossal mess the way we run the world. I'm a senior citizen, and I don't see anything getting better. But I just learned that in China and Korea, they take dogs and cats, and sometimes they're stolen, and they hang them upside down and skin them alive. And sometimes they're still alive for 15 minutes or so. I'm sorry.
Wow, Jocelyn, that's a... Are you aware of this, Greta?
Yes. I mean, there are some very atrocious practices, and you know, there are people like Jocelyn who have made the choice to be vegetarian, and I'm sure that in her shopping habits, you know, she's conscious about where it comes from and what she's supporting, and that she, you know, that she has identified and for herself maybe made the choice that animals are not fabric. And there are people, you know, and this is what I'm saying, is that there's no right or wrong way, and this is really an individual's journey. So if you've decided that, you know, that you don't want to support that, it's important for you not to support that, and it's important for you to support brands that have better practices and that aren't using animals and that are cruelty-free. And like I said, you know, that's up to the individual. Unfortunately, I will say, and there is this argument about pleather versus leather, you know, that pleather is while it's a it is an animal-free fabric, it's a pretty toxic fabric. You know, it's a synthetic fabric that we make, and it doesn't biodegrade, and it doesn't, you know, age as well as say a leather, and a leather is something that we you know, have used throughout the ages to clothe ourselves and make shoes and things like that. And I think at this point in time, like I said, it's a personal journey, but at this point in time, you know, until the world is vegetarian, that there are these sources of leather that come out of the meat industry as a byproduct. And my advice would be, if you're not ready to give up, you know, your leather goods, is to really look for those brands that are sourcing from those areas. So they're using a byproduct, they're putting it to use, they're upcycling leather maybe that's used in a different industry, you know, like leather that's used for the car interior. There are scraps from that are being used to make bags or jackets and things. So it's just, I think, a more conscious effort of, like, where is that coming from and how are we using it until there is a better system and until there is a better day when we maybe aren't using animals as fabric or even as food.
I have a bit of a practical question for you. As people think about overhauling their wardrobe and clearing out their closets to make way for some more eco-friendly fashion choices, what's the best way to dispose of our old clothing so that we're not, you know, we're not sending all of our clothes to the landfill?
Right. And, you know, on average, 13 million tons of textile waste goes into our landfill every year. And the sad part about that is that 95% of it is recyclable. So the good news is that we're actually privy to that statistic now. And there are textile recyclers. There are textile recyclers in Japan and even here in the U.S. that are now seeing this textile waste as a commodity, the same way that we saw, you know, cardboard or glass bottles as a commodity that can be recycled and used again. And one of the best ways to do is just don't throw it away. You know, even if you have a pair of socks that are done and you're not, you know, they've got a hole in them and you're not going to pass them along to anyone, don't throw it away. You know, put it in a bag that either there are different collection bins that you've probably seen around your community that say, you know, that they take clothes and shoes, and you can drop them off and put them, they'll go into the textile recycling stream that way, or you can drop them off at a Goodwill, and a lot of the different thrift stores are now connected to those textile recyclers. And one other way of doing it, I was pretty impressed actually, is that H&M has a take-back program called iCollect, where they have bins at their different store locations where you can bring one bag at a time of different clothing. It doesn't have to be H&M. It can be anything. And when you drop it off and you place it in their recycle bin, they'll actually give you a coupon for H&M for your next purchase. And they do have the Conscious Collection, which is using organic cottons and recycled PET materials. So there are these kinds of systems that are coming up to help facilitate and make it easier for us to participate.
Well, we only have a few minutes left, and your book touches briefly on beauty products and hygiene and some of the things we need to be concerned about with regards to those products. What are some of the ingredients that we should be on the lookout for? Let's start with hygiene products.
Right. So for me, that was a personal journey of looking at what was in my food and then what was in my beauty products. And I'm sure that a lot of people have heard the saying, you know, if you wouldn't eat it and put it in your body, don't put it on your body, because your skin is the largest organ. So you actually wind up absorbing it. But when it comes through your skin, then you don't actually process it and get the toxins out the way you would if you ate something and put it through your normal system. So it's very much something that we're aware of now. It's looking at, you know, the sodium lauryl sulfates in your hair care products, the parabens, even, you know, formaldehyde, which is present in nail polish if you're not careful. And so you can look for products that will now say paraben free, or for nail care it'll say 5-free, which means that it's free of those 5 most toxic ingredients that used to be kind of standard. The good news is that we're having kind of a renaissance in this area, so it's getting easier all the time to find cleaner products. And you can visit the Environmental Working Group site, which is a Skin Deep database. I think it's skindeep.com. And you can actually put in a product, and they will give you back their rating and tell you what they're concerned about, what's in the product, or if it's a pure product.
Mm-hmm. Well, say we want to start upping our game on making better purchasing decisions after hearing our conversation today. I know that all the elements we've talked about in your integrity index, and we didn't get to them all, it's a personal choice where to get started. But what would you say is maybe the easiest place to get started without being overwhelmed with the process?
Well, I would say, and what happened for me was, and I think it's a great kind of way to start dabbling is to do the secondhand. If you can shop secondhand, and especially I think that it's a timing thing. Some women know their style better than others. Some of us are still exploring what our style is and what, you know, suits our body types and our shape and that sort of thing. And if you're still in that exploratory mode, I would absolutely say, you know, shop secondhand, see if you can try those trends out, try those designs out. And once you discover something that really works for you, then it's looking for those brands that are maybe hitting some of those more environmentally friendly standards of using low-impact dyes or organic fibers or recycled fibers and things like that, so that you would support and maybe make a purchase into something that's a little bit of a higher quality and something that you know you're going to have in your wardrobe, because a sustainable wardrobe is a wardrobe that you actually wear and that really supports your sense of self as well as the ethics that you have.
Greta, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Greta Egan is an expert stylist and writer specializing in conscious living, author of Wear No Evil, How to Change the World with Your Wardrobe. Thanks to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this hour, Bill Martins for on-air production. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.